duties, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt addressed the nation through a series of radio broadcasts known as the Fireside Chats. His aim was to reassure the common man that our society would recover from its troubled times. But we're far from 1930, and I deal with a different kind of far. For a new era of worldly frustration, we offer a fresh conversation. I'm Greg Carlwood, and these are the Fireside Chats.
Hey, hey, what do you say, Higher Side Chatters from San Diego? I'm Greg Carlwood. My God, this is a good episode. Fresh off last week's Good Times with James Colquhoun. Kyle's here with me again, second week in a row. What's good, pimp?
Oh, man. I'm not a pimp. I got to get that on just straight up. I do not sell women. But having said that, things are going good, man. Really, really good. I'm psyched about this interview today.
Yeah, it's been a pretty slow week. I did want to thank one of the listeners, Fernando, for a huge donation of $55 to THC. Amazing. Way more than I would expect for a donation. I've gotten a lot of fives, a couple of tens, handful of 20s, but 55 is definitely the top of the pile. So thank you. And that's generous and crazy. Fernando, you're the goddamn man. So I also opened up conspiracies to international orders. Not an easy thing to work out. And shipping was a bit high, but I had the first international purchase from Francisco in Belgium, picking up the squid of power and the riot cops. The only man in the country rocking conspiracies right now. So thanks, Francisco. The two of you guys are going to help me eat this Friday, Fernando and Francisco. So thanks.
Yeah, these guys are real trendsetters.
Yeah. And I was going to ask you if you heard about what happened with Bernie Madoff this week.
He was sitting his ass in jail. That's all I thought about him this week.
Right, but apparently he is trying to reach out from jail, and he wrote a letter to CNBC saying that there's no way Banks didn't know exactly what he was doing, and he wishes now that he would have pled guilty he wouldn't have pled guilty just so he could have had the big trial and exposed that the economy is a whole giant Ponzi scheme. Of course, he's not going to be able to say anything too damaging through CNBC, so I thought maybe I'd write him and see if he wants to have a letter read on the air if he were to write me back. I also thought it'd be funny to give out his prison address in case anyone wants to write him. I mean, I know he's not the best guy in the world, but he's been the martyr for the entire financial sector, and that might be a situation that provides us with some insight from a guy who's probably pretty pissed. So if you do want to write him, throw in that you're from THC, and if he writes back, by all means, send it to me. We'll read it here. We'll try to get some actual information out if it works out. But you'll probably have to rewind this. But his address is Bernard L. Madoff, inmate 617-270-54, Butner Medium, B-U-T-N-E-R, Medium, comma, F-C-I. I don't know what that means. P.O. Box 1000 in Butner, North Carolina, 27509. And this would be awesome if somebody got a letter back from Bernie Madoff. But let's see if we can make some news happen, people. He clearly wants to talk, but CNBC is going to redact anything of real value, Bernie. You know that. So give it a shot, and let's see if we can get him to talk.
There's a history, too, of other prisoners who, when been put in jail, now they're like a lot more open to talking about stuff. The guy who was supposedly the Son of Sam killers, he let out all kinds of information from prison about how it was a network, how it was much bigger than just him, and how all this occult activity was going on. So, you know, hopefully Bernie Madoff, you know,
join the club.
Now that he ultimately got screwed, he's like, hey, why not? I'm just going to shit on everybody else, too.
You got nothing to lose.
Why not?
Exactly. So, if you're bored, people, write Bernie Madoff a letter. I don't know. It might be fun. But either way, today is an amazing show with a perfect guest. There's literally nobody on the planet I would rather have on the show. Nobody. This man is my Clooney. He's my Bieber. He's my Kanye. And I'm talking about Jacques Fresco, the founder of the Venus Project. I refer to the Venus Project every time someone asks me about a solution to the big conspiracy. To me, that's it. Kyle, what do you think?
I think what this guy's laid out is very reasonable. It's if we were to take all these scientific so-called, you know, breakthroughs we've had and actually apply it into a moralistic system of providing for everybody's needs and making sure everybody had access to all the same goods. It just sounds sweet to me. It sounds like the dream.
Amen. And looks like they just signed on, so they're going to be here to talk to us about it. And we'll be right back after this Conspiraties ad. Of course, I'm going to try to sell you something on this episode. But, you know, people say that's hypocritical. People have been actually giving me shit about the, you know, oh, you want me to buy your shirt that says quit your job, or you want me to buy your shirt that says what's after capitalism. Well, I would say, look, if the whole country is going to play a game and we decided it's going to be soccer, I might scream till I'm blue in the face that baseball, which is a much better game, is what we should play. But, you know, I'm still going to try to play soccer well if we're all playing.
They're good shirts, man. Who are these whiners? Who are these fucking brats?
Haters. Haters. Haters going to hate.
Dust
right.
them off the shoulder.
Yeah. All right, we're going to be right back with Jacques Fresco.
We're here because we don't buy into the bullshit of mainstream culture. We're tired of the mundane, passionless careers we've been shuffled into as a result of this orchestrated debt-based system of rule and the stranglehold on education and entertainment by cold, soulless corporations. People, yes, we are frustrated. Yes, we are tired. And we reject the pre-approved tranquilizers that are Monday Night Football and an ice-cold Budweiser. But we have to stop hiding. Stop hiding behind the headphones and the Cherry Popper 420 username. Let the world see that the resistance is strong and society is changing. There was a time to be anonymous, but that time has passed. And so the Higher Side Chats would like to present Conspiraties as the dawning of this new paradigm in the uniform of the revolution. Because bold fashion should mean more than some celebrity meat dresser frat boy in a silly pink polo. Conspiraties redefines bold fashion as having the balls to reject socially uncomfortable and unpopular truths from your radiant chest all fucking day. Conspiraties.net. Let them know that you know. Bold designs for troubled times. Hard truths. Soft talk.
Welcome back, Higher Side Chatters. You know we talk a lot about the problems of our society on this show. Corporations are presenting us with food that's devoid of nutrients. Our government has kept us at war for nearly its entire existence. Homeless people are begging for food in front of overstocked grocery stores. The list goes on and on, but the one thing these problems all have in common is that they're profitable. And they've been around as long as money has, yet you've never heard a politician ask the question, what's after capitalism? I find that people get really uncomfortable when you start talking about replacing the monetary system, which is a sign of excellent brainwashing. But here to give us a deep cleaning we really need is a man who's identified these problems long ago and has spent the better part of his life studying society's effects on human behavior. He came up with his own version of a global society beyond politics, poverty, and war, which he calls the Venus Project. You've seen his work featured in the Zeitgeist movies as well as Future by Design. His name is Jacques Fresco, and he's here today along with his partner and co-pilot Roxanne Meadows. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you, Greg. We appreciate it.
Yes, we do.
Well, you know, Kyle and I are both huge fans of your work. You've done more to open my eyes than anybody has, probably anybody ever will at this point. There's no one I'd rather bounce questions off than you, Jacques. And in fact, I'm so glad to have a chance to say this to you directly, but only a few weeks away from your 97th birthday, I'm a bit ashamed and embarrassed as a human being that we haven't listened to you on a much larger scale. And thank you for everything.
I consider it an honor on your show.
Oh, I appreciate that. Well, I mean, clearly humans have never really gotten it right when it comes to structuring a society. And for those who haven't heard of the Venus Project, the ones we really have to reach today, tell us a little bit about what it is, Jacques.
Well, if you want a world without war, poverty, unemployment, hunger, and most of the problems that you have, you have to change the way we do things. You have to declare all the resources of the earth as the common heritage of all the world's people. Anything less than that will result in the same problems over and over again. If few nations control the drinking water and the arable land, other nations will try to invade to take what they need. You cannot solve problems through self-centeredness or nationalism.
I totally agree. I mean, like I said, we've seen these problems as long as I've been alive, way longer than that, and they haven't gone away. And I don't think they will unless people take a real look at the structure and decide to change it.
They can't do that. They have to be educated to do that. They have to know exactly what makes war, why nations kill each other. They have to know why these things happen. It isn't human nature at all. There's no such thing as human nature. Although the nearest thing to it is the knee reflex. If you pound the knee lightly, it'll move. And the elbow. Human nature is the color of the eyes, but not the value system, not your attitude. Selfishness is learned. Bigotry is learned. Race prejudice is something you learn in your culture. Your culture is responsible for every word you use, all the facial expressions. If you don't remember this, your mother said glass, table, light, over and over again. Mama, papa, over and over again. So all the words you use are picked up by your culture.
That's definitely the case that you've made. I get in some arguments with people who just don't see it that way. How would you try to break through to people? How would you educate people who are just so stuck in their paradigm because they know nothing else?
You're right. They know nothing else.
How would you educate them, he asked.
Well, we would educate them by telling them the things you know that they don't know.
Of course they should watch Future by Design and look at your work to really hear more. And this is the big question. It is so important to really help people see the greater vision here. Let's assume the world adopted the Venus Project model, and we spent a few years getting it set up and a lot of the kinks worked out. Can you walk us through the life of an average person who would grow up in the Venus Project society as opposed to what we have now?
They would never get into arguments with one another. They would say, I don't know. Those are very few words that people ever use. I don't know. But if you give everybody a right to their own opinion, you're going to have misinformation all over the world.
Jacques, is what you advocate that we, like Greg just suggested, immediately jump into where the whole world accepts the Venus Project? Or could we start by just allowing some of us to be sovereign? Like, let some of us start the project, and then the rest of the world can go on in the capitalist fantasy where we destroy the whole world. But can't some of us be sovereign? Can't we just start this? What's preventing the start?
Well, it starts with education. You have to hold meetings once a week and discuss the book, the best that money can buy, chapter by chapter, so that all people understand what shapes human behavior.
We also are under the confines of the monetary system today. So one of the things we advocate is a city to test out the validity of these proposals and have a center for doing research and development. And it takes funding to develop the city.
And we should explain to people who haven't heard of the Venus Project, this is a system, a structure beyond money. Can you elaborate on that a little bit, how that would work?
Yes, as long as you got money, you can pay off senators, lawyers, judges. You have to do away with the money system. We now have the capability of producing in abundance and make it available. If you don't understand this, it's just like the public library, where you can access books of any kind. Next door to the public library, we have a camera center where you can access any kind of camera you need. Next door to that, we have musical instruments where you can access a banjo, a guitar, a saxophone. In other words, if you make things available, like the public library, that's the end of most crime.
And how would all these products be made? Through automation, correct?
Yes, eventually automation. But during the beginning, it has to be put together by hand tool. Until you get to that point.
Or fabrication, making molds.
Well, what about this 3D printing that's popular now?
What about what?
3D printing that's popular now. They have machines that will actually print objects.
We do use them here.
That sounds like something that sounds very sci-fi to me. That's a great technology, and it's completely opposed to capitalism. It's directly, you know, against the system. If you can make things abundant, how can you really charge for them if you're printing them for free?
You don't charge for anything. It's just like the public library. If you don't remember, you go to the library and you check out whatever books you want. If you want them longer, you have to call the library and say, I'd like to keep the books for another week, as long as you tell them that.
Right. It seems like our technology is actually getting to a point where it's hard to implement within capitalism because things are getting so much easier to make.
Well, not only that, capitalism wants things to wear out and break down so they can resell. In other words, capitalism at one time was the best system we knew of. Today, it's obsolete. Politicians, as you can see if you watch the newsreel, the Democrats cannot communicate with the Republicans. Neither can the Republicans communicate with the Democrats. They just make different noises. Remember this, that politicians say things people like to hear. Whereas scientists say, man evolved from the lower animals. These are things people don't like to hear. And they confront people with their false values. There was one time when people believed the earth was flat, but the scientist says, you're wrong. This is the information that we have, the shadows of the earth on the moon, many other things that they cite to give you the reason why they say it's round. It's not just an opinion, it's based upon observations.
Right.
So when I say science, I mean the methods of science.
Well, you mentioned that we'd be able to end arguments among people, and that seems like a pretty lofty goal. How would that be handled?
Well, you don't want to argue with people at all, ever. What you want to do is tell them, give them information that you have regarding the scientific method. They don't have, in other words, people ask me, who makes the decisions in the Venus Project? That's what they really want to know. And nobody makes decisions, they arrive at them. Do you know the difference between making a decision and arriving at a decision?
Right, I mean, you look at the data and you come to a conclusion that isn't based on opinion, but...
Exactly that. You survey, you do studies of the strength of material, and then you write the specifications that this metal has cobalt, manganese, tungsten, whatever it goes into that metal that makes it resistant to certain forces. The scientific method is the closest method to identifying reality that we know of today.
So scientists don't really argue and give opinions. They check things out and they put forth their findings, and other people can duplicate that same thing. They don't say, believe me, this is the hardest structure or the hardest material. They put it through tests, through tensile strength, compression strength, and they come up with different data. And there's nothing to argue about.
And the things we don't know, we say we don't have enough information in that area to offer a decision.
You hold it in abeyance.
Yeah, the way you guys describe science is just so based on actual data and logic that it just seems almost like a sci-fi. It reminds me of Star Trek. Like on Star Trek, there's still bars. Everybody still goes to the bar and everybody eats together. And everybody kind of shares the resources. And everybody in that TV show was like a scientist. They were just... trying to help each other out. And when I think of the Venus Project, that's really what it reminds me of.
The real difference in the future is nutritionalists will tell you what you have to eat. You couldn't buy junk food. Cigarettes would not be available. because cigarettes always, in time, produce cancer and heart disease. That goes for frankfurters, salami, all preserved foods.
And
are dangerous for human beings.
Although it sounds completely counterproductive, should not an individual have the right to partake in cigarettes and junk food if they desire?
Yes, during the transition, yes. But not after the thing is installed. Children are brought up to be educated as to what good nutrition is. They're not brought up that way today.
Well, you know, they sell cigarettes today, and they offer cigarettes, not because they're good for people or they help them in any way, but because the government gets a kickback on the sale of cigarettes. And then also, cigarettes inevitably causes cancer. Cancer is a huge money-making venture within the monetary system, within the medical system.
Right. It's always a treatment, never a cure. But we've talked about education a little bit. How would you say we've been betrayed by our education system that we have right now?
Because of the profit system. Business works for money. The proof of that is that they outsource to China rather than employ Americans to do a given job. If you didn't export to China, you would lose your competitive edge. Your profits have to show real high margins. Otherwise, no one will invest in your company unless you have a profit system.
I don't know if you heard the question. How have you been betrayed by your educational system today?
You teach them basic science and how it works and how scientists arrive at decisions. People have no idea. They think one opinion is as good as another.
Really, the education that you have today is based on the need of the culture. They're not interested in enabling you to think and be critical about too many things, because then you may be contrary to the system and the needs that it has. In other words, every system, whether it's communism or socialism or the free enterprise system, they all give you an education and raise you to perpetuate that system. They don't teach you about cooperation and collectiveness and working together within the monetary system as they may in a socialism. Country, because they teach you how to be individualistic, how to be competitive in the monetary system, how to take care of yourself. And if you don't, you don't get the things that require you to live.
Yeah, one of the basic problems with the way we do education is that if you cooperate with your classmates, that's called cheating. You know, they tell you right away that it's just you. You're on your own here. We're not sharing ideas. We're not, having dialogue amongst each other and coming to group solutions. What we're doing is being tested alone, and then we're graded as to how good we are, when really, you know, you have to make mistakes in order to learn in the first place.
Right.
It's all to reinforce the same capitalistic traditional ways. And why is it that people are so stuck in tradition and are not willing to look at new design?
Because all countries are corrupt today. England, France, Germany all use the same system. They are all corrupt.
And those in position of differential advantage, those who are doing well, they control the movies, the entertainment, the books, the schools,
the
university, yes, primarily the news. And they don't want ideas that will rock the boat or threaten their position in any way.
Why should the oil companies vote for the electric car?
Exactly. It's an odd thing, because on this show we always are talking about things, you know, generally under the label of conspiracy, but, you know, all the big problems of the world, and you can find so many people who are willing to say, oh, we should end the Federal Reserve, but when I answer back with we should end capitalism, people retract very quickly. They get very scared of the idea of getting rid of all of it. You know, they just want to fine tune what we have. And like, is there any way you can suggest to break through to people who really are just afraid?
Yes, there is a way. The system that we advocate is not communism. A lot of people think it's communistic. It's not. Let me tell you how we differ. Communism has armies and navies. We don't. Communism has prisons, police. We don't. Communism has banks and money. We don't. So we have nothing in common with any existing system.
I think the best thing we can do is just get more information out there in the forms of movies, videos, radio, interviews like you're doing to expose this direction and ease people's fears. They've never been exposed to anything other than communism, socialism, free enterprise system, or fascism, and they don't even know what that is when you boil it down. You know, if they proclaim that you're a communist and you bring them, put them to test and ask them how and why and, you know, what part of this is communism, they really don't know. They've just been given a fear word. So they really know very little. It's a huge job. And most people want to know what's in it for me. So it will take, unfortunately, because they're not educated emotionally or intellectually about what's happening around them, it will take losing their jobs, losing confidence in the government, or losing their homes before they look around and say, this isn't working. We want something else.
You mentioned a society without police, and that's something that I've always tried to work out in my head because I've never had a positive interaction with a police officer. And when I bring this up to people, they say, well, what do you want? Just chaos in the streets? You got to have police. So how does the Venus Project handle crime?
We make things available to people. Everybody can access anything they want, just like a public library. With a public library, you don't have to pay anything. If you had all things accessible, all things that people need, accessible without charge, without debt, without servitude, you have no basis of crime. There'd be no crime if people had access. If you don't understand that, if orange trees grew all over the world, you couldn't sell oranges. If you make things available to people, they do not steal.
It's a great point. It's something I say when I see someone go to jail. I say, you know, if we could make a standard of living that was better than going to jail, no one would go. But these people, a lot of people who are going to prison, don't really see it as a punishment because now they have a roof over their head and food, which they couldn't have previously.
They only learn to become better criminals. Jail is the worst thing you can do to a human being. You can educate them out of the system that they've been learned in this system. People are made by the culture they live in. If you don't understand that, if you were born in Australia, you might say, how are you, mate? And if you're brought up in the South, the uneducated region of the South, you might say, I'm old, give me a nigger and kick his ass. Where do you get that from? The environment. You're not born that way.
I agree. And it seems like you've done so much work on society's problems. Which of these problems have you found most difficult to work out? Are there any?
All the established points of view. They're in the brains of people. They've been put there for over the years of misinformation. Our schools do not teach you how to think. They teach you to become a cog in the wheel. How to fit in with the system. Psychologists today try to adjust you to fit in with the system. That isn't psychology. That's controlled behavior. What you need is behavioral science to show the conditions that make a serial killer, that make him a criminal. Criminals are made by the culture they live in.
Agreed.
It's not the genes. You don't have criminal genes. You know, today they're looking for the Republican gene or the gene.
Yeah, I agree. But Let me, because I love the Venus Project, and I want to be able to make a better case for it in my life when I'm talking to people and educating people. Let me ask you to address some of the issues that people bring up to me in arguments that I just can't really answer back to. One recently was, what if 10 million people, we're talking about a global society now, what if 10 million people want to go live in San Francisco now that it's not the most expensive place in the country?
Well, you know, they say that all the time about Florida also, but it's not true that everybody wants to come to Florida. People like different seasons. You know, they like the ski. They like many things about the weather up north, too. So it's really not a viable statement that they would do that. And when you make, people would be free to move around as well and work in different areas. But when you make certain things available, like cities in the sea or every area a very nice place to live, and places where people are working and engaged in things, it's not like that they want to go just frivolously and go to another area that might not suit their needs, even though the weather might be nice.
Right.
I just think that that sounds so great to have the freedom to travel. Because that's one of the great things, working in the underclass of the current capitalist system, there's no vacations. You can't just pack up and move. You know, you have leases. You're tied down to where you're at. You're forced to keep doing by contract the same thing day after day. And to replace that with a system where you could actually travel with your friends, you're not tied down to any home anywhere. You can kind of move around the planet. You can explore your own self. It sounds amazing to me.
Here's another criticism that I've gotten back, is that people say if every need was provided for, you wouldn't find individuals educating themselves. They'd just be lazy. How do you address that?
Oh, do you know any place on earth where people can do anything they want to do? There is no such place. They're speculating.
No, he's saying that if everybody has their needs, wouldn't people just become lazy?
No, that's false, because you've never had that experience.
You know, kids, if you get them when they're young, they're real inquisitive. They're always doing things. And if people are healthy as they get older, they remain active and they want to participate in things. What really kills inquisitiveness and the drive to participate is a 9-to-5 job that gives you minimum wage that you don't like. You're so stressed out in this culture today that you think that's the way people are, that they just want to get away from work and do nothing. But if you had access to anything you want, to be able to learn anything you want, to go out in boats or fly, learn how to fly, or learn biology or medicine or how the weather behaves and start to manipulate things so you can create better weather. If you get into things that are so interesting that they drive you to want to work, you know, people today, when they lose their jobs, sometimes they go and volunteer, even though they have no money. Over the last hundreds of years, people have always given you things not because there's money put in their bank account, like Martin Luther King didn't march because he had money put in his bank account. He did it because he believed in what he was doing. And when people have the ability to participate in things and they see that what they're working on benefits your lifestyle and their lifestyle, I could pretty well assure you that people would be doing that. They wouldn't be sitting around doing nothing. They would be ill if that was the case.
It seems like, and you're describing laziness as, or defining laziness as, just a rejection of the current structure, which I don't disagree with. That's a pretty fair analysis.
Yes.
It's a byproduct of the inefficiencies of this culture. And that's true with drugs too, and alcohol. They just want to dull you down. Or a lot of times people don't have the tools to say the things that they want to say to people around them in a way that would be acceptable. And so they drink, and then they can blurt out anything they want to say, you know? So You know, if life was so interesting, drugs or alcohol would dull you down too much to do the things you want to do.
Don't forget, you can go to school and study anything you want to without a price tag. You don't have to pay money to become a doctor or a lawyer. You can go to any school you want to free of charge.
That sounds amazing. Now, how would you reach people who are, I would say, brainwashed to the point that they're convinced that they like their job and things aren't that bad? How do you reach those people?
Well, Hitler was able to convince people because they were not educated to start with. We have a lot of people in the United States that can't read or write. I think it's 20,000 or more. And I think as long as you have that, you're going to have problems. You have to be able to get to people. And you can't do that because the newspapers, the newsreels, your media, your motion pictures are all about the system. There's only two movies that I know of that were made against war. All Quiet on the Western Front, and thousands of movies made pro-war. Soldiers are killing machines, and we would have no soldiers, no armies, no navies. We would train soldiers, send them back to school to become problem solvers. We had a lot of unresolved problems, and that's what we need, not killing machines.
I totally agree. And another question I get faced with is, when we have machines making everything from clothing to cars to musical instruments, how do we maintain customization, which people have come to value?
Because you got to remember that the Iceman doesn't exist anymore. There used to be a person that brought ice to your icebox. With the invention of the refrigerator, it did away with the Iceman. There used to be ladies operating elevators. They would turn a crank to move the elevator up or down. They're gone today. There's no such thing as an elevator operator. They're automatic. They stop at whatever button you press. So a lot of jobs will be phased out. In the future, there'll be no lawyers, no businessmen, no bankers, no armies, no navies, no prisons, and no police, because people have access to what they want. You don't need police.
You know, it's really an illusion of choice that you think you have free choice around here, and it's customized. Like, you can go to the store and pick out anything you want for your kitchen, but I guarantee you that thing that you're picking out is made to wear out and break down. So if you want a society that creates abundance and gives everyone a high standard of living, you don't want to make 300 objects that do the same thing as a wrench, because each company has to compete against another company. You might want five different things, like that instrument that acts as a wrench, that's very, very high quality, that won't wear out and will work for you. So this illusion of choice is really in the marketplace to be able to sell more things.
Well, what about homes? Will people have any choice in the type of home or housing that they're in?
Absolutely. If they don't live in the kind of house they like, the system won't work.
That's true. How do you accommodate everybody's preference?
You design the houses, but let them furnish the insides, whatever they want.
Well, that gets into the customization issue. You know, if I want a red couch, but my city only provides black couches that are, you know,
all the ceiling of every building has thousands of little glass beads, and by shooting light at a different angle through the beads, you can change the color to red, blue, green, whatever you want.
That is fascinating.
Yes. Now, not only that, but you have zone cooling in the house. Instead of air conditioning the whole building, in the area you're seated, it's one temperature. Area another person seated is another temperature. It's called zone heating. zone cooling, so you can have maximum expression of individuality, not uniformity.
Here's another question. Every city in America now is a filthy mess, but without having assigned cleaning people, how can we maintain the cleanliness that's presented in your models?
Okay. In other words, you have places where you put plastic, you have places where you put garbage, a chute, and it goes down to the bottom of the city. If it's not a renewable resource, you can pump it down underground, 1,000 feet underground, where it's very hot, and it changes the chemistry of the product, so you can use it for fertilizer. We have no waste product that we dump into the ocean. We don't dump stuff in landfills. We don't use sprays on plants to protect, to keep the insects off. We use high-pitched sound, and that keeps certain insects away from plants. Certain insects are good for plants, so we don't want to keep all insects away from plants. We just don't want to use poisons, that's all.
You know, you can make things self-cleaning. Even today in France, on the streets, they have public bathrooms where you go in, I think you pay a little something, or maybe it's free in some instances, but when you walk out, the whole thing is cleaned automatically and sanitized before the next person comes in.
And this has been in France for years. It just hasn't come to this country yet.
You know, when you go to scientists and you ask them to do certain things like go to the moon or make mass transport, they come up with it. They can do that. You go to philosophers or religious people, they can't build that. So we've never gone to scientists and give them the problems of the things that you're talking about, how to make things self-cleaning, how to make a city that's clean, efficient, redundant, very pleasant for people to live in, transportation that doesn't crash, you know, how you eliminate automobiles because they're terrible for people. What kind of transportation do you make instead of that? They don't give scientists those questions. They give scientists today are really abused and are prostitutes in the system. They give scientists projects of how to compete with another person, another industry, how to make machinery that would compete faster and then patent it for one industry over the other industry, even though you're making the same product. You don't all combine and make, for instance, the best car. Everybody has their own little patents to try and beat the other person. So you're really prostituting scientists today. They make weapons of destruction and war. That's some of the biggest industries for science to go into. So we're abusing science. That's not real science. It's corrupted. We haven't given scientists the real problems, the real questions. And that's where the Venus Project would use the methods of science for the benefit of people and the protection of the environment.
Years ago, I was told that some people are good, some are bad, some are lazy, some are hardworking. None of those things are true. If you reward behavior, you can perpetuate it. For example, I wanted to know whether the male's behavior toward the female is learned or is it inborn. So I went to the South Sea Islands, where all the natives wore no clothing. This is in the tropics. They wore no clothing at all, and there were no peeping Toms on the island. Nobody collected pictures of nude women because the men and boys, the boys and girls when they were children, were swimming nude and they never wore clothing. So that didn't generate fetishes or peeping Toms. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I do. And that brings up another interesting point is jealousy. If you can imagine a scenario where a man catches his wife cheating and comes in and slits their throats, how do you solve that? How do you handle that?
First of all, there's no marriage in the future. You move in with the person you get along with. And if you don't get along, you move out. You don't have to pay a lawyer. There's nobody pronounces you man and wife. Who the hell is that guy with the white collar that says, I pronounce you man and wife. Where did he come from?
You don't own your partner either. And you understand in the future there are many people that can meet different needs. You're not alone and isolated and just have one person that can meet certain needs. And in the future, if you walked in and you found your partner with somebody else in bed, you might say, honey, how much longer will you be? And then you talk to them after and say, where is it that I'm not meeting your needs? You'd have a very different orientation than what they have today.
Women are looked at as the property of man. There's no private property in the new enterprise system that we advocate. The Venus Project has no ownership. You don't own anything anymore. The whole earth belongs to all people, and we cater to their needs. There's no politics.
That dynamic is so foreign that it's hard. It really is hard to conceive in some smaller examples and instances.
You know, even today, if you were married to somebody, and somebody just walked in. I got sidetracked. If you were married to somebody and you got along with them, maybe about 10 different points. You had similar values and you got along with them. And then later, you met somebody 5 years later who you really had about 40 points that you got along with and you identified with. You'd automatically like that other person. You might even feel you love them more than your wife or your husband, but you'd say to your partner, oh, I like her, but I love you. Even today, as in the future, you really love as many people that you meet in your life who are lovable, who you share values with. You can't help it. Only it would be more understood in the future.
Well, what about, you still have to account for human emotion. I mean, are we talking about getting rid of emotion? Because that's still there. What if someone commits a crime based on that rather than needs, financial or economic needs, someone
that's creates... That's without the Venus Project's control. The Venus Project administers education. It teaches children how to solve problems. And it gives them the methods of thinking their way through a problem. They're taught, just like an auto mechanic is taught how to service a Volkswagen or a Mercedes. They have to be taught. And people have to be taught how to live, not depend on their, what you call, intuitive feelings.
You know, jealousy is learned. Bigotry is learned. You're not born with those qualities.
If you don't understand that, if you have two children and you treat one child as a favorite, you manufacture jealousy in the other child. It's you that are doing that. Only parents don't realize that. When parents say, you're a Catholic, you don't play with that Lutheran boy.
All right.
You understand?
I do.
Prejudice.
And this question here I have is really something that has been tough for me when thinking about the Venus Project or how it would work. But last year we saw the Occupy movement, which really was a push towards a new way of doing things. And I tried to get involved in the local goings-on here in San Diego, but the biggest problem was the lack of leadership. Everyone wanted to operate on consensus, which couldn't even address the simplest problems. It was total gridlock. Help me get over this idea that a leaderless society wouldn't be paralyzed by inaction.
Yeah, you got to remember that people do not know what to do. Your politicians don't know how to solve problems. Don't take my word for it. Ask any politician, how can you grow more food? I don't know, they say. How can you prevent war? I don't know. There's always been war, there'll always be war. They just repeat what they see. They really don't know what to do. So when you have a strike in Egypt, where most of the people rebel against an existing or established system, they don't know what to put in its place. Ask them. Don't take my word for it. People don't know what to do. Whereas the Venus Project has blueprints for the buildings, the libraries, the schools, the subject matter taught in schools, everything that it children are taught are based upon physical science, not opinions.
And I agree that people don't know what to do, but that is why it's so hard for me to conceive of a proper transition without some type of leadership, even the right type of leadership.
Look up the venusproject.com. You can get all kinds of questions and answers on our program.
It's not so much a leader that we're looking for, but the direction that we want to go and the procedural systems to achieve that direction. And this is what the Venus Project offers. You know, when you want to build a bridge, you deal with people who are competent in building that bridge. You don't go to the local baker or the plumber. So there are people who are more competent and more educated in certain fields, and you address those people.
Right.
That's true. If you want to make a commercial airline pilot, you have to send them to aviation school. If you want to make a medical doctor, you send them to medical school. We have the same thing in the Venus Project. We educate children to learn how to find answers to questions, not opinions.
We want to eliminate war, poverty, crime, hunger, all the detrimental effects that the monetary system superimposes on people. So you look for the root cause of the system. This is what Jacques arrived at when he was very young. And people were talking about wanting a better world in the future, and they're talking about having peace and harmony and love and, you know, nice cities, but they don't know how to achieve that. They don't even know what's causing those things in this system. And so the work has been done. The blueprints have been done. The direction has been laid out. And if you learn more about the Venus Project, you'll understand how it can be achieved and how it can be maintained, and what are the steps that you need to achieve it and perpetuate it, and what types of values would you be needing to do that as well.
So please look up the Venus Project.
Right. I would encourage anyone to do that, because this is such a huge paradigm switch that there's so many little questions that need to be answered. And they've done the work. You guys have definitely done the work.
If you get the book, The Best That Money Can Buy, you will learn just how the Venus Project accounts for human values. The book is called The Best That Money Can Buy, Beyond Politics, Poverty, and War.
Perfect. And can you outline a little bit about the energy system? How would energy be provided if we got rid of the structure we have today?
The best source of energy would be geothermal. Inside the Earth, there's a lot of heat, and it's replicating. You can't wear it down. If you dig a deep hole, dig enough, and you pump water down there, it'll be converted to steam. And the steam can turn turbines, and it doesn't depend on the weather. Photoelectric cells, if it's cloudy, you can't generate much electricity. The Venus Project uses geothermal energy, the heat inside the Earth, which is constantly replenished, so you never run out of it.
The people who work in that field say that we have enough energy for the next 4,000 years with geothermal for the whole Earth.
Wow. We talked a little bit about the ability to travel. How do you handle transportation in the Venus Project?
There's trains that go anywhere without a fee, so you can get on and go. There's no fee involved, no tickets. There's no money spent to go to theater or anything. There's no box office. You just walk in and enjoy the movie.
And one other criticism people have said that you just kind of touched on and reminded me of is they've told me that the Venus Project seems like a sort of cold, emotionless, scientific structure. Where is the room for the arts? I mean, people have so much time. I assume they could just participate in art whenever they want.
I think from what I understand, science is all humanity. Science deals with what to do with different diseases. So if you study a scientific method of repairing broken bones, it's the best method known. If you look up a scientific method of good, healthy nutrition, is it perfect? No, but it's a hell of a lot better than no knowledge of nutrition?
You know, our problems are really technical. They're not
political.
Yeah, they're not political, and they're really not artistic in a way. Although there'd be lots of room for the arts, you'd have free art centers, music centers, anything that you'd like. But the real problems are technical: how to get enough food to people, how to take care of their medical needs, how to build bridges, transportation systems, housing. You know, all the real needs of people in that way are technical.
If you don't understand that, your refrigerator, your electric light, your washing machine, these are the things that liberate people, not political speeches. So when you think of what is an advanced culture, it's a culture with aviation, so you can fly from one place to another, travel by train from one place to another, but we don't want the trains to wear out. So the wheels wear out, and the axle wears out, and the tracks wear out. So we invented maglev trains that repel the train off the tracks. There's nothing to wear out. It never wears out. Think about that.
And you know, they say science is cold, but that's so inaccurate. Science heals you when you're sick. It gives you food if it was done properly, not Monsanto food. You know, it gives you a roof over your head. Science is so warm and loving that the other way of looking at it is so mixed up. The values are so strange. Jacques always used to tell a story that I liked, where you have a hill and a precipice, you know, a steep precipice, and there's a road on the side of that hill, and the car goes over the side, and the person that attends to that person who's got injured in the car comes and holds their hand and says, "There's there," and tries to comfort them. And then the doctor comes along, they're brought to the doctor, and the doctor patches them up. But the engineer, who you don't see at all, who they call cold, looks at the problem, bent, kind of tilts the road in the way that the car won't fall off, puts a grid in the road, puts up a high railing so you'll never go over and you never have that accident again. But they're considered the ones who are cold.
That's a great point. That's a great point in people's perception.
They have no idea of what controls society. They think it's human nature. They think that people are basically selfish. They are not basically any way in particular. If you were raised as a baby by the headhunters of the Amazon, you would be a headhunter. Do you understand that?
Right.
If you never traveled or saw anything else, and if I said to you, "Doesn't it bother you to have 10 shrunken heads?" you might say, "Yes, my brother has 20. That bothers me." Are you nuts? No, you're not. You're normal to that culture.
Product of the environment.
In Salem, Massachusetts, they used to burn witches. Did you know that?
Yes.
In America? So when people say, "Give me the good old days," I don't know what the hell they're talking about.
I face that a lot with people who want to go back to what our forefathers had planned for us, and that it's a little ridiculous.
Yeah. And if you didn't own any land, or if you were a woman or a black, you couldn't vote. You'd had no say. The forefathers took care of themselves only, the wealthy ones.
Right. Everybody tries to bring that into the current culture, and they really ignore all the problems there really were and all the inequality there really was. And I would rather look forward than back.
And look at what the forefathers perpetuated. Here's the mess we're in now.
Exactly. That's a great point. Now, when I tweeted to people we were going to be doing this show, I asked everyone what they'd like me to ask you, and they all pretty much boiled down to varying degrees of the same thing, which is, what can I do to push this forward? And of course, we talked about education, but outside of education, is there anything concrete that people can really do to push this forward?
Yes, that'd be great. Go to our website under Get Involved. And I would say check it in the next couple months, because we're renovating all of that. We're redoing our different groups that are working on different projects. We have several projects going now.
All over the world.
Yeah, we have people all over the world. We're going to be posting, anybody who wants to be involved, any place in the world, will be posted on the map, on the website, so people can get in touch with one another. We have lots of materials that they can use to help spread the word, and if they want to go from being a supporter, if they just want to go out in the streets and talk about it, all through doing different projects. We have a Corsan project going on. We have a marketing people. We have lawyers that are helping. Any way people want to help. We have over 4,000 people who have signed up on our professional database. We're working on a business proposal now for a first city project, and that will be introduced more so as we roll that out. So we need lots of help with that. We're starting with a research center and going on to a university or an educational center of about 1,000 people within the first eighth of the city, and we have plans to build that up. If we don't get any main support financially for that from the outside, we're going to be doing it ourselves. We just have a lot going on. Check the website. But as I say, we're rolling out a new website within a couple months, and there'll be a lot more on it to get involved with.
That would be amazing, because I know so many people that really are frustrated with their 9-to-5 job, and they just feel like they're completely trapped. And I think that if there was a place where they could go, where the Venus Project was trying to put forth their model, I think I know a lot of people that would pack their bags and show up on your doorstep ready to work.
Well, we have lots of people working all over the world in different places, and we're doing it collaboratively over the internet.
Can you tell us at all where you're planning to put this city?
We don't know yet. We're open. We're talking about someplace outside of the United States, because it is so hard to get here, get into the States, get papers to get into the States. True. For some people. So we're looking at a couple other locations, but nothing is definite yet. Yes.
Well, you know, I recently saw the headline that protests in Bulgaria got so bad that the government officially resigned. Should we all just pack our bags and set up shop?
In Bulgaria, that's interesting, because we have a very good chapter in Bulgaria.
I think their government has collapsed. I think they might be looking for someone to take the helm.
Jeez, that's wonderful.
That's such an odd reaction to a government's collapse. I love it, but to the average person, like, oh, that's wonderful.
But it is a problem if they have nothing else to put in its place.
Well, true.
We have, you know, if you look up the venusproject.com, we have books, videotapes on all the different questions that people ask. So please, look us up.
Yes, absolutely. We have a lot of things going on the internet. We have things that you can purchase, books and videos, and that help support the project. We also have, just a wealth of information that we have for free on the internet, lots of free ebooks. We have the YouTube channel. There's lots of lectures on there on different topics. There's a lot of information. We have an interesting, one of the people in the chapter in Turkey just made a website called Ask Jacques, where there's different questions in audio, in video, and in text form about the Venus Project.
Wow. I mean, you guys have done a huge amount of work in looking into so many problems and everything. Is there any aspects of human behavior that you haven't sorted out yet, or any problems you haven't fully worked out yet?
Well, we want to do a motion picture about life in the Venus Project. How it would look, what would people do if machines do all the work? How would they spend their time? We want to make a movie. And if we can make a movie in different languages and run it all over the world, we can get a bigger following fast.
Yes, I do think people need to see that. I think that the biggest thing that's helped you guys so far is the movies you have put out and the video content you have put out.
Yes, I think so.
How is the progress of that movie going?
Well, we're still working on the manuscript. The manuscript is very important that people understand it, not project their own values into it.
And we've made some very good contacts along the way, too. So it's developing in many different areas. And we also, we haven't really rolled this out yet to talk about it, but I will mention it's in the works. I hope it continues. We're working with a animation group who will be putting something out on the internet every month, a half hour in life in a resource-based economy. So there'll be more to learn about that as we really announce it more so.
Nice, that's excellent. And you guys are you guys still doing tours of the grounds in Venus, Florida?
Yes, thank you. We have tours. It's more like a seminar. Jacques speaks for about 4 hours. I take people around the grounds and show them the hundreds of models that we have here. It's a kind of an intimate setting. They come for 4 to 5 hours here, and they can ask whatever questions they like as well.
Excellent.
It gets pretty heated, the conversation sometimes.
It's Saturday at 1 o'clock, every Saturday.
That's right.
That's great. I definitely plan on taking that trip in the next couple of months. You know, it's something that's super important to me. I'm just so frustrated with the situation I'm in. And when I go to work and I deal with other coworkers and customers who don't see these things, it's even more frustrating. It feels like the Twilight Zone.
Yes, I agree with you.
That's well, what keeps us working so hard, because we are afraid of the values that are perpetuated out there.
Agreed. And I feel like I'm part of the problem when I'm stuck in my job. You know, I'm part of these financial transactions that I don't care about because I need to keep a roof over my head.
Well, we look at it that we're all prostitutes in this system. You have to do that unless you decide you want to live under a bridge somewhere, you know?
Yeah, I agree. Well, Jacques, Roxanne, I'm such a fan of your guys' work and ideas. There's nothing more I want than to see this come to fruition. I think you're a social engineering Einstein. I hope you feel like your work hasn't been in vain, and I hope this is going to work out before we blow ourselves up.
It will.
It has to.
We don't want to kill anybody or hurt anybody or condemn anybody or any nationality or race. We're non-racist. We're open to all people throughout the world.
And one thing, people always think, well, we need to convert everybody to, you know, understand this method of social design. You really don't. You just need a few of the right people. So, you know, we couldn't do it without you putting these ideas out there.
Hey, I feel like all audience building I've done up to this point has really just been there to perpetuate a solution rather than talking only about the problem. So this, I'm humbled and proud to be a part of the contribution to that education. So thank you.
Thank you for all your effort. We deeply appreciate that.
That's right. Thanks.
All right. Well, that pretty much does it for this episode. Conversing with you is something I'll be proud of having the chance to do for the rest of my life. I'd change the name to the Venus Project Chats if I could do this every week, but I'm hoping to meet you both in person in Venus, Florida, and take that tour. So it's been quite amazing for me. Best of luck, guys. Stay healthy.
Thanks. Can't wait to meet you here.
All righty. Thanks again.
And thanks, Jack.
Adios.
Man. I'm so happy with that talk. I mean, Jacques Fresco really is the pimp of pimps. Maybe you are, you know. We're all prostitutes. Somebody's got to be the pimp.
Right.
But is there anything that stuck out to you with that?
You know, the guy, he's just been doing this for so long, and he's just a real visionary. I mean, you were asking him, does he have any questions he hasn't fully worked out? And he seems pretty comfortable, I would say, with his, like, answers to pretty much everything.
Right. And I mean, there is such a challenge, though. The man is 97 years old. He's still spry. You know, I mean, what's the Venus Project going to look like in 10 years? You know, it's not something I want to bring up to somebody who's 97 years old, who's really trying to do everything they can do.
Mm-hmm.
But it is kind of a morbid question. I hope we get there, you know?
Well, his dedication to visualizing the idea, I think, sprouts that idea in many other people. And, you know, whether it's called the Venus Project 10 years from now or whether an actual, you know, very similar version of it springs up somewhere else first, you know, I think it's changing the evolution of ideas about what we can do as a society.
Well, it ties into the piece that you just wrote on THC.com, but it's very isolating. It must be incredibly isolating. I can only imagine, like, in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, before anyone gave a shit, how isolating it must have been.
I love those old interviews where he's a young guy. I mean, I wasn't even born, and I'm watching videos of him in the past talking about the same stuff. Then I go through this whole growth process and go into my own awakening, and now here we are talking to him. And I don't know. It's just amazing.
Right. He is the number one guy that I would want to interview. There's no one else. It's mainly because there's no one else out there really talking about solutions. That's the thing. We can identify the problems. We keep trying to dig deeper and deeper into, you know, where are the connections? You know, who did what? You know, what's the real motivation behind this media story? And in a way, they've got us on just a different hamster wheel.
Yeah, and to me, he has had the big revelation that what we're living on is a whole society based on scarcity. Scarcity of everything.
Right.
And he's going to replace it with abundance. Abundance of everything. And it's just such a polar opposite. I think people just can't even... It just jogs your whole paradigm to such a degree. You just can't even entertain the idea. You're just like, I don't even know what that means.
Yeah, and that's an important point to make, because so many people think that, well, we don't have the resources to get food to everyone, or we would. And that's programming. That to me is complete brainwashing, and obviously Jacques Fresco would agree.
Yeah, it was a cool tie-in to the last episode too, when we're talking about agriculture, the whole
nutrition,
idea that,
yeah,
agriculture destroys the topsoil. We're gonna have no topsoil left, and all of this is bad design. And Jacques is all about good design, and good design is based off of observation. And so you got to look at all the shitty ways we're doing things and then just really actually design something different and say, hey, you know, guys, we have to do fucking everything different now, because this is what we've learned. This is what we've observed from the bad ways of doing things.
Right. We have had the same problems our whole life. War, poverty, lack of resources. I mean, we got a homeless guy begging for food outside of a grocery store while they're throwing food in a locked dumpster out back. I mean, this is the design we currently have. But I still maintain that the hardest part for me to wrap my head around, the biggest question mark in my mind, is leadership. I mean, the Occupy movement was a piece of shit because there was no leadership.
Yeah.
Say what you will. I loved it. I wanted to be a part of it. But when you get down to it, we're standing here, a big group of people, tents everywhere, and there's one group of people that says, hey, I want to be here and support this, but I have to work at 8 o'clock in the morning. Can we have quiet hours? Somebody else says, no, we can't. And then there's a problem with no solution, because guy A needs quiet, guy B won't be quiet. Where, and without police, without some type of system, how do you enforce that? I mean, Jacques' answer would be education, but I mean, Jesus Christ, what if the guy just rejects that, you know? We were assholes when we were 16 years old. I can say I rejected the system because of its corruption and because I didn't find a place in it. But maybe there's just something in prepubescent kids when they're starting to grow into themselves that they just want to smash some fucking windows. You know, how do you stop a kid from running around smashing windows when there's no police or consequence?
I just personally kind of disagree about police. Because the whole enforcement and punishment based thing, I think, fails at preventing it as well. You're asking, how do we prevent it? Well, cops don't prevent it either. They just come and punish.
Great point.
But, you know, I really don't know. It's how things would be so different in a system where we didn't feel the scarcity, or we didn't feel like we were just being ripped off or sold everything and programmed with the worst kind of TV and commercial bullshit our whole lives. It might be different. Maybe we wouldn't be so aggressive, but I do think that what Jacques and Roxanne, they're going to stand by, is we can make the best design possible. We can educate people the best as possible. If people, despite all of this wealth that they're being given, are still going to have psychotic breaks and do crazy shit, that can't be prevented. And cops can't prevent that, and nobody can prevent that. It's just the school shootings can't be prevented.
Right. That's not a reason.
Unknown is unknown.
Right. And that's not a reason to try to not try to make things better, you know.
Yeah, don't let that immobilize you, because you can't actually know the unknown. The future is unpredictable, and people are scared to death of that, but you have to come to terms with that, because the idea that we actually know what's coming tomorrow is an illusion anyways.
Amen. Well, I really like that. One thing Jacques used to say when he was talking about jealousy as he was talking, he gave this little anecdote about talking to a behavioral scientist and said, "Hey, you can't fix jealousy." And he's like, "Well, what is jealousy?" And the guy says, "When I pet my cat, the dog gets jealous." And Jock's like, "All right, well, let me see these animals." And he started giving the dog a treat every time he pet the cat. So after a couple of days, when he picked up the cat to be pet, the dog was happiest it's been all day. You know, rather than being jealous of not getting the attention. And he basically says, it's economics, you know. It's just economics. It's proper incentives.
Mm.
That's all we really are, is just dogs chasing cars, you know. Give us the right car to chase, and then things might get done the right way. I love how aggressive and bold his statements are about police, military, governments. Just, it's all bullshit, you know. Patriotism, that's a disease. One of my favorite Jacques Fresco quotes. Hey, well, I hope we talk a lot about capitalism on this show, especially in the past month, and I hope it's not getting too redundant. But when I look at the pyramid, when I look at the giant conspiracy, this is where the root of the problem is. We got a lot of people hacking at branches, and not a lot of people hacking at the root. And I think that's scary to a lot of people, you know, to say that the answer is so large that it has to change our entire structure in every possible way. That's tough. That's scary. But, you know, we're not going to fix our society by getting rid of chemtrails or finding out what happened at 9/11. I mean, those are just such small questions. You know, the Great Depression, that was a great opportunity to say this system doesn't work, but that's not what we said. We said, sign us up for more.
It's a hard truth right there.
You know, I've supported these ideas through several of my t-shirt designs at conspiracies.net, with the Quit Your Job shirt and the Corporate Sheep shirt, and my proudest design, the What's After Capitalism shirt. And I feel so good when someone picks that up, because I feel like it's really promoting the change I want to see. So check them out. If you're in San Diego, actually, Conspiracies are now available at a great little conspiracy bookstore called the Book Tree in Normal Heights. Tell them I sent you down. But you know, I got to thank Jock and Roxanne again. And Kyle, people, please share this episode, particularly if you think it's important. Let's plant those seeds. Kyle, any last words?
Let's fucking do something new.
Amen, man. All right, I'll see you guys next week.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. Imagine all